Hashem, we'll start the third parak. What we should have in front of us is a chumash, and we have to look in two different parashios. One is in Mishpatim, and that's the parasha called Mefateh. And there in parak of Beis, the Torah says, V'chi yefateh ish v'sula asher lo orosa v'shacham ima mahar yimarenu lo le'isha. So the Torah first and foremost says that in the case of Mefateh, you have to marry her. The Mefateh has to marry the Nifta. The Imoin Yimoin Aviyah. However, if the father of this Nara, and we'll soon see what a Nara is, refuses to allow his daughter to marry this Shlom, then Kesef Yishkol Kimara Besulos, then he has to pay a Knas, a penalty, which is Chamishim Kesef.
Excuse me, which Perek in Mishpatim is this?
This is Perek Chaf Beis.
Chaf Beis, yeah. All right.
So as far as onus is concerned, and that's in Parashas Ki Teitze, it says Ki Yimtza Ish Nara Besula Shelo Rosso Tfaso V'Shacham Ima V'Nimtza'u V'Nasana Ish Ashochev Imola V'Via Nara Chamishim Kasef V'Lo Sia Le'isha Tachas Asher Ina Lo Yuchal Shalcha Kol Yamav. So in the case of Ma'anes, where she didn't give her consent to this act, the Torah adds another element into the equation, and that is lo yeh lo yuchal l'shalcha kol yomav. Now, in the first case of Mefateh, then he has a mitzvah to marry her if the father agrees. But in the second case, not only does he have a mitzvah to marry her, but he has an isur lav, which is going to be one of the subjects of this perek, that he's not allowed to divorce her.
So theoretically, with the bitui, he could marry her and then just divorce her right away.
That is correct. But he can't divorce her in the case of Ma'anis. Now this knas only applies to a woman who's less than 12 and a half. At the age of 12 and a half, she becomes what's called a bogeres. So in the 6-month period between her 12th birthday and 12 and a half, she's called a Nara. And the Torah explicitly mentions Nara here in the parasha of Ma'anis in Ki Teitze. We may talk about the fact that in the parasha of Mefateh, it doesn't say explicitly Nara. Now, as far as a Ketan is concerned, from the age of 3, when she's Re'uya Labia, until the age of 12, that's going to be a Machlokas Tanoim, and that's going to be the first sugi that we start in Mirtz Hashem today. Now, in addition to Knas, which is the 50 Kesef, the 50 Shkolim, there are other financial penalties that are involved in the cases of Onus and Mefateh. And those are called Nezek, Tsar, Uboshes. Those are Chiyuve Chavola. In other words, this act of Bia is classified as a Chavola, Chovel Bechavero, and Chovel Bechavero has to pay 5 different categories, 3 of which apply here in the cases of Ones Umefateh. And those 3 are Nezek, Tsar, and Boshes. The Gemara elsewhere, not here in Ksuvus, is going to deal with Ripui and Sheves. And the Gemara is going to establish that Ripui and Sheves are 2 categories of payment that have nothing to do with Onus Umefateh. One, because she doesn't need any doctor's treatment, she hasn't been physically maimed in any way. And 2, because she can still go to work, and therefore he doesn't have to pay her unemployment.
What nezek is there, though? Nezek is normally understood to be financial.
Right. Her financial worth on the market, and again, I'm just mentioning a little introduction here, we'll get into the sugyas as we go along, has gone down, has decreased.
The knas is not for that.
No, the knas is a separate payment. Nothing to do with nezek, tsar.
Okay.
Nothing to do with that. Okay. So you know what, I'm going to cut down I had a long introduction, but I see that you're very curious about what's coming up later, so let's leave out the introduction, because I really want to get to the Mishnah. So the Mishnah now is going to address the case of Onus. There's going to be a long discussion about whether or not this Mishnah addresses the case of Mefateh, and we'll get to that later on. So the Torah says, with regard to ones, v'lo seal isha. In the case of ones, the Torah imposes two basic dinim on the rapist, on the ma'anis. Number one, he has to pay a knas, which is chamishim kesem. Number two, he's got to marry her. And the Mishnah now addresses the following issue. What happens in a case of ma'anes where there's no possibility of his marrying her? The halach itself blocks that possibility. And the reason for that is because these are called nashim psulos lo. Psulos lo means that because of their relationship to him or because of their status in yuchsin and so forth, they cannot, he's not allowed to marry them. So what we're going to do is we're going to ask the following question. Is this parasha of ma'anes in Sefer Devarim, is it a package deal and it's A plus B and you can't divide the two, or is it two independent, an overlap of two independent elements? If it's an overlap of two independent elements, then one element is the knas, that's the financial penalty he has to pay. The other element is the mitzvah of a lo seal leish, he has to marry her. If we assume that those two elements are independent, then even in the case of noshim psuos lo, which means he's not allowed to marry them, the halacha cannot allow him to marry her, nevertheless he still has to pay knas. And that's the subject of our Mishnah, Elu Naros Sheyesh Lahem Knas. I don't have to tell you about a regular classic Nara Besula, who's not Besula, I mean she's Muteris, so I want to tell you a bigger Chiddush. I want to tell you a list, I'm going to give you a list of Naros that do collect Knas, in the case of Ma'anis, even though there's no possibility of consummating a marriage here, because she's an Isha Besula. And the first case on this list is Abba al Hamamzeres. Now the case of Mamzeres is a woman who is born to a marriage of an Iser Kares. That means she is the product of a relationship that sexual relationship would incur a Chiv Kares. As a result, she is called a Mamzeres. There's only one exception to that rule, and that's called a Nida. In the case of a man who has a relationship with a nida, the child is not a mamzer or a mamzeres, but in all other cases of chiyuvei kares, the child, the product of that relationship, is called a mamzer in the case of a male, or a mamzeres in the case of a female. Now, a mamzeres is prohibited to anyone except for two categories, and that's a mamzer is allowed to marry a mamzeres, or a ger is allowed to marry to a mamzeres. But in all other cases, if we're not dealing with neither a mamzer or a ger, if this boel, the one who had this ones relationship with this woman, is a regular Yisrael, he's neither a mamzer nor is he a ger, he's not allowed to marry this woman because she is a mamzeres. And the Mishnah has her on the top of the list of chiyuvei knas, meaning this is a woman who's psula lo. She's actually psula for everyone except for those two exceptional cases. And the Mishnah is telling you a big chiddush. You would have thought, well, if he can't marry her, then the whole deal is off, and maybe the whole knas is off. No, the Mishnah wants to tell you that the knas still is imposed, because the knas is a separate, independent dimension in the parasha of Ma'anis. And it's totally independent of the marriage relationship. So even though the marriage relationship cannot be consumed, nevertheless, the Chiyuv Knas is there. Now, amongst the questions that the Mefarshim ask, and they're manyfold, one of them is, why did the Mishnah have to mention Habba al Mamzeres? Why not a Mamzer Habba al Anara, Anara Kshera? Meaning, if the Chiddush of the Mishnah is to tell you that if there's no possibility of consummating this marriage, nevertheless, the knas still remains in place. The Mishnah could have told you that chiddush even if he's a mamzer. It doesn't have to be that she's a mamzeres. And some of the Farshim give technical answers to this question, that the Mishnah is going to list a whole series of nashim psulos, and in order to make it consistent and symmetrical, they mention a woman who's a mamzeres. But Eino Chinami, the Mishnah could have mentioned mamzer as well. However, there are those who want to suggest something totally different, and that is that the Mishnah wants to be mechadesh, that the nature of this penalty is to protect the reputation, so to speak, of the victim. She's the victim. And you might think that if she's the victim and she's a mamzeres and she's an isha psula for everyone, then maybe in this case, the fact that he can't marry her is not just an indication of the iser between them, that would apply even if he was a mamzer, but it's actually a result of her, if you will, lower status in Yuchsin, that she's excluded from Kahal Yisrael as a mamzer. So you might say, well, if the thrust of this criminal act is because he violated a woman, an isha of Yisrael, well, if she's a mamzeres, you might think that in that case, the violation of her status is not that severe because she's anyway psula l'kohol. So maybe now we should lower our penalties as far as this paying the knas. Kamash Volanovich wants to tell you a double chiddush. Number one, that the knas is in place even though he cannot consummate the marriage. That chiddush could have been expressed even in the case of a mamzer. But an additional chiddush, that even though she's a mamzeres and therefore she has a psul yuchsin, she's excluded from Kahal Yisrael, and therefore maybe as a victim she doesn't have rights to collect the knas. No, kamash mal, and that even so she has rights to connect the knas.
This whole question applies to Nitunah Ketutit as well, right? Why not the man?
We didn't mention anything about Nitunah Ketutit, did we? Let's get on to Nitunah Ketutit, and then you'll ask your question. Right,
oh,
now,
sorry.
I just want to focus on Mamzeres. You'll get used to the style. You know,
okay.
What I like to do is I like to present something on one case, and then you want to ask me about other cases, we'll do so. We only have 45 minutes, so we're going to try to do whatever we can.
Okay,
then? You'll get used to the style.
All right.
Now, in the case of Mamzeres, we're talking about a psul yuchsin d'oraisa, because the Torah itself says in the same parasha of Ki Teitzei Lo Yavo Mamzer Bekal Hashem. However, the Mishnah wants to know what's the status of a ma'anes isha who's only psula midirabbanan, which means that on a d'oraisa level she is a kshera. She's not psula on a d'oraisa level, and he in fact could consummate the marriage, but the rabbanan made her into a psula. And that's going to be the case of Nesina. And as soon as I finish presenting it, Chaim, you'll ask your question. Rashi says that who is a Nesina? So Rashi tells you, this is about seven lines down from the top, that this woman comes from Givonim. Right? The Givonim were one of the seven nations that occupied the land of Israel when Yeshua crossed the Jordan to conquer the land. And these Givonim lived in Givon, but they duped Yeshua and his officers, and they dressed up, camouflaged themselves, and present themselves as if they came from a far-off country, which means that they didn't have to be destroyed under the mitzvah of Lo Sechaya Kol Nesham, which only applies to the seven nations. And they said, we want to enter into a covenant with the Jewish people. They did so not out of the love of Judaism, but simply because they were afraid that Yeshua was going to completely decimate all seven nations, and they were one of the seven nations. So they present themselves as if they came from far afield. Now, as a result, Rashi says that although the Gerus, their conversion, was valid, again, even though they weren't motivated by the great reasons of love of Judaism, nevertheless, David gazar aleihem. David came up with an enactment, and through this gzerah, he prohibited them from entering into Klal Yisrael. The Rambam explains in Hilchos Yisur Bia, the reason he did so is because the Givonim were very cruel. And even though we can accept a ger from any of the seven nations that occupy the land, because once them is geir, we assume that they can now become Jewish people and be part of the Jewish folk. But nevertheless, in the case of the Givonim, otherwise known as the Nesinim, Yoshua was concerned, and David HaMelech picked up on Yoshua and prohibited their marriage. So in Asina, according to Rashi's sheet, again, you have this long Tosfos, which is for an Iyun Shir, that's at 11:45, if anybody wants to come, that this Tosfos argues with Rashi and Rabbi Nitam, which is three lines down from the top of the wide lines. You'll see Nirali Rabbi Nitam, Dinasina Surah Midaraisa, And the Rabbeinu Tam applies the principle to Schatin Vav, that you're not allowed to marry this, these women who come from the seven nations, even if they undergo Gerus, and even if the Torah recognizes the Gerus, the Torah says you're not allowed to marry them. That's the sheet of Rabbeinu Tam. But Rashi's sheet, which we're learning right now, is that the entire enterprise of Nesina as an Isur Knisa Lakal is only a Gzera Dirabbanan. And you might think, well, since the Torah says in the case of Mahanas he has to marry her, and from a Torah perspective he's allowed to marry her, then maybe we should encourage the marriage. But here we have the principle, which again is the sugya unto itself, Yesh Koch Biat Chachamim Lakar Dov Min HaTorah, that the Chachamim have the power to be Oker a Mitzvah Min HaTorah. So even though he has a mitzvah of marrying her in this case, nevertheless, the Rabbanit suspended that mitzvah, and they have the authority to do so based on the Gzerah of David HaMelech. Go ahead.
Okay, number one, I was going to ask the whole question we had about why Mamzer, not Mamzer here, replied to Nitina as well. Secondly, but about Oker Devar, Oker is that only mitzvah das asay that they can?
As long as it's shevi al tasay. In other words, if they tell you not to fulfill an asay and therefore be passive, if there would be a way in which they can tell you to be passive and violate a los asay passively, they would also have an authority in that way. So that's a sugya masechta Yevamos. If I remember correctly, it's on Ayin Tes. And that's what it's all about. So Rabosai, in the case of the Sina, we're really turning back history to the moment of Yoshua's Kibush HaAretz, in which Yoshua crosses the Jordan, he's conquering the land, and these people called the Givonim show up, and they want to enter into the Jewish people, and they want to go through Gerus, and their conversion should be valid. So Rashi says, okay, even if the conversion is valid, although motivated by the wrong reasons, these were people who really belonged to one of the seven nations called the Chivi, if you remember that nation. Nevertheless, Yoshua put a whammy on them and he established that you're not allowed to marry these women because he saw their terrible cruelty and he didn't want to have that admixture. You know, today we have this very liberal attitude that we want to take all Gerim and encourage all non-Jews to convert. But back in the day, maybe today we need more Gerim, I don't know. But back in the day, they were very careful about who should enter into the Jewish people. It was a whole different mentality than what we have today. It's very hard to explain this to contemporary man. But back in the day of Yoshua, then David HaMelech, David extended Yoshua, they wanted to keep these people out of the Jewish folk. Now again, what the status of an Asina is, as far as Tariq Mitzvahs, the impression you get from Rashi, and maybe even Rabbeinu Tam, is that these Nesinim would be obligated in Tariq Mitzvahs. As far as their Gerus is concerned, it's a valid Gerus. But there's another dimension to Gerus, and that's Knisa Lakol. And here the Torah says, Lo Tischate Bom. That's the way Rabbeinu Tam understands this Mishnah. However, Rashi understands that we're talking about a Gzera of David HaMelech, and the Rabbanan have the power, the authority to create an Isur Lava Bakal, and that Isur Lava Bakal is going to undermine the mitzvah of Alotia Le'isha in this case of Ma'anis. But nevertheless, the Mishnah insists he still has to pay Knas, because the Knas is independent of the mitzvah of Alotia Le'isha. Now we get on to the third case in the Mishnah, and that's V'chein. I'm adding a few words here. V'chein ha-ba al ha-kusis. Okay, this is a woman who is a descendant of those who lived in an area called Kusa. Okay, and this was an area that was on the borderline, on the border between Israel and Bavel and Babylonia. And these people were brought by Melech Ashur, the Assyrian king, after the 10 tribes were exiled. And Melech Ashur, who had taken over the land, he wanted to populate the land. He didn't want to leave it fallow. So he brought in these Kusim, this nation from a place called Bavel, and he brought them to an area of Eretz Yisrael, which we can identify today, Baruch Hashem. It's Shomron, it's called today. And what happened was, all of a sudden, the lions started attacking these people who were settling in Shomron. And they got the impression that this was a sign from God, that since they were pagans and they were worshipping their idols, God was taking out his vengeance against them. Here they were living in the land of Israel, which they understood to be the holy land that was designated for the Jewish people. And now when they take over the land, because Melech Ashur put them there, they began to think that they're going to be swallowed up by these lions. And those are called Arayos, again, Arayos with an Aleph. As a result, they came to be Mizgayer, and their conversion was out of fear. Now, there's a gigantic machlokus exactly whether conversion out of fear is valid or not. According to our Mishnah, it would seem that since Gerusam lohoisa amitis, it was not a sincere, genuine Gerus, therefore, enom nechshovim kigerim. They're not considered gerim. They're like nachrim. And this is going to engender an entire machlokus here in this Tosus Yalakusis. How could it be that we're going to pay a knas to a woman who's not Jewish? She's going to take the money and she's going to spend it for her temple, you know, for her idol worship. How does that work? Now again, if the perspective of the Torah is to punish the Ma'anes, and he has to suffer some sort of financial penalty, then it makes sense that even if she's a kusis, he would have to pay that penalty. But the question is, what is that money, where is it earmarked for? And many Rishonim are going to say, and hopefully we'll get into this, but not today, that money has to be designated for the poor people. We're not going to give it to the goyim. We're going to force the manis to pay that money, but she's not going to pocket that money, because again, these kusim were pagans. The Gemara in Chulin says we can't trust them for shechita. We found that they were worshipping doves that were on the mountain, and so forth and so on. And the title, if you want to know this, for the kusim is called Gerei Arayos. It became like a halachic concept called Gerei Arayos, which means they were gerim because of the lions, because they were afraid of being decimated. But they really didn't want to observe the Jewish religion. And in fact, according to at least one school of thought, they never did worship the Jewish religion. So now they are non-Jews. If they are non-Jews, then we go back to the pasuk that says Lo tischatein bam, which is in the 7th chapter of Dvarim. And as a result, there is no knas. So let me just summarize one of the footnotes here in the Masifta. It's number Chav Dalid, and I encourage you all to buy a Masifta if you can. If you can afford it, if you can get hold of it. And he says the following: Harishonim hikshu im atana sovik by the amakusim geri arayas seven achshavim kinochrim gemurim. According to that opinion, that the gerus, the conversion of the kusim, is invalid. The Torah doesn't recognize it, and therefore they are not Jews. Im kain madua yesh lekusis knas. Why does she have rights to collect the knas? The Torah never says that we pay a penalty to a nochris, a non-Jew. That school of thought came to the conclusion that we have to quote a Gemara in Yevamos, which expresses a second view on the status of kusim, and that's called gerima, or geria emesheim, which means that the Torah does validate their gerus, even though again they were insincere about their gerus in terms of the motivation, but they did observe the mitzvahs. Elim came kashim gerim gemurim hei ma'achidish. So we're really caught in a bind. If you hold a kusim on not gerim, then the overriding rule is that we don't pay a knas to a nachris. If on the other hand they are gerim, so what's the chiddush of our Mishnah? The Mishnah wants to list psulim, and here the mitzvah of marriage should apply because they are full-fledged gerim, and the Torah recognizes that gerus. And there are many different answers to this mimonafshach over here. Some Rishonim say that although we shouldn't give them knas, but nevertheless the Mishnah wants to say that we will collect this fine, and that's called in the language of the Rishonim Shaloye Chote Niskar. We don't want the sinner here to get benefits from his sin and get off scot-free, but the money is not going to be delivered into her hands. The Yeshikos, Husha Mishnah Bol Lachadish Sadin Shekusim Geri Arayasim, that the whole thrust of that Mishnah is to establish that these girls are Jewish girls and that the Torah does validate and recognize their gerus. So just to let you know, the Sugya of Gerus is in Yevamos. It starts on Daf Ayin Vav. It continues all the way to Ayin Ches. In contemporary life, for example, I have to give a series of lectures next week in the OU Center on contemporary halakha. It's a 5-part series. So I was thinking maybe they gave me the choice of whatever topic I want. Maybe I would choose Geirus, because Geirus is a very hot issue today. And the whole Sugya Yevamos, over the course of 3-4 blot, tries to address what makes the Geirus valid. You know, is it enough that a person wants to join the Jewish fold? They want to be part of the nation? Do we have to have an absolute commitment to the religion? Do they have to accept all Tariq mitzvahs? Do we have to know that they're sincere about Tariq mitzvahs? What happens if after the Geirus they immediately revert to paganistic religions? So again, Geirus is a massive, massive subject. The Encyclopedia Talmudid has a gigantic essay on Geirus. It's a fascinating topic, and it really starts here in our Mishnah, because the question is, what's the status of a kusis when the kusim converted out of a motivation of fear? They were geri arayos, and therefore there was no genuine acceptance or embracing Yiddishkeit, meaning the Tariq mitzvahs. Is that a valid geri simply because they made the declaration and they want to join the Jewish people and they want to identify with our nation? Is that enough? And again, this is relevant. You all know what I'm talking about. You know, the Aliyah from the Soviet Union, and how do we make, you know, the Russian so-called Jews who are serving in the IDF, you know, how do we make them Jewish when they really have no commitment to Torah mitzvahs? Is there a possible gerus for them? If you heard about the controversy revolving around Drukman, are you familiar with this? Very complicated business here with the Russian Jews. There is a program, by the way, in the army where they send the Russian Jews whose status as Jews is questionable to religious families. You know about this? It's really cool.
When I was married, for one Shabbat, we hosted a couple of girls.
Yeah, it's part of a program. I think it's called Ale or something like that. Maybe it has a different name. And it's amazing how the Israeli army puts out so many funds, you know, to support this this movement. I think it's part of, you know, our celebration of Yom HaTzmaut, of Israeli Independence Day. And a lot of these Russians become so amazed by meeting these families, you know, over the course of 6 months to a year. Again, it's all voluntary. They don't have to join this program. Okay, so that's as far as Geirus is concerned. So let's move on, because again, we haven't even begun yet, and the clock is ticking. Okay. Habal ha-giyores v'al-ashvuya v'al-ashivcha. Now, these are three women whose status as a besula is questionable. The Torah, in both the parasha of Mefata and in the parasha Ma'anes, makes the precondition that we're talking about a besula. Correct? Ki imsa ish nara besula, or ki afata ish besula. Now, a woman who comes from a non-Jewish background, even though she converted, is assumed, under normal cases, our Mishnah is the exception, she's assumed to be a be'ula. So when the Mishnah is now listing cases which are included in knas, it's got to be limited to a besula. Why is a giyoris included? For the same token, why is a shivcha included? A shivcha is also a non-Jewish woman who enters into the Jewish fold as a shivcha, but she carries with her the stigma of being a be'ula. And in the case of a shvuya, she was captured by the non-Jews, and the assumption that the halacha operates with, and that's the sugi in the first parak of Ksubis, is that she had a rape situation, she's no longer besula. So the answer to this question is that we're talking about Shenis Gairu Vinishtacharu Pchusos Mibnos Sheniftu. I skipped a word. Sheniftu Shenis Gairu Vinishtacharu Pchusos Mibnos Sholosh Shonim V'Yech. Meaning that a woman, even if she's non-Jewish, if she undergoes Geirus before she was Re'uya Labia, before she reaches the age of 3, because after the age of below the age of 3, we have a principle called Bisulea Chozrim, which again, if you take this on a very simple level, this is really not the pshat. You know, when you get into deeper levels, you'll understand that this is not really emes, but what it means is that biologically her membrane will regenerate itself. I mean, it's much more complicated than that. But let's just take it on a simple level. She remains a besula even though she's a be'ula. What does that mean? Even though maybe there was a relationship here, But nevertheless, since she's less than 3 years old, she is a besula. And now, what does it mean she's less than 3 years old? Her status as a full-fledged Jewess, right? Or in the case of a shivcha, of a shvuya, her status as a mishuchreres means that she was freed from her state of shvuya, which means it was a pidyon shvuya, in other words, we ransomed her. That all took place before she hit her third birthday. And if that took place before her third birthday, she still has the status of a besula.
I was going to ask, with a convert, are they truly, I guess, if they're below the age where they themselves can choose to be Jewish, then how does their status...
Excellent. So that's a sugya, one of the most famous sugyas in Shas, on Daf Yud Aleph, in this Masechta, which is called Ger Katan Matbilin Oso Al Das Bezdin. Do you know anyone? My family, I have a niece and a nephew, both of whom were born non-Jewish and were converted almost at birth. Again, it's very complicated. It's very hard to get such a child in the United States of America. But if you're successful, because the parents, or the biological parents, can't raise that child, so the child is up for adoption, then what happens very often, I don't know if you know this, is that an Orthodox couple who are childless and they want to adopt a child, so very often they will adopt a non-Jewish child and be Megayer the child. The question, how could this Geirus be meaningful when you need Das for Geirus? You know, the precondition of Geirus is to accept the Tariq Mitzvahs. So that's the Sugya Daf Yud Aleph, one of the most famous Sugyas in all of Shas, that we can actually convert a child before the... And in that Sugya, which is on Daf Yud Aleph, the Gemara quotes our Mishnah as a proof that the Halacha of the Torah recognizes the validity of such an entity as Geirus of a Katan. Because we're talking about a Giores before the age of 3, which maintains her status as a Besula because she's not Royal Abil. And therefore, the Knas is going to be paid. Now, if you're talking about a Gioris who's after 3 years old, correct? And for sure, if she's a Gioris at the age of 12, then the assumption is that she is a Ba'ula, and therefore we would not impose a Chiyuv Knas. And that whole sugya is on Daf Lamed Vav, which is towards the end of our chapter.
Why would there not be a Knas? Wouldn't she just be a regular Jewish...
She's a ma'ula. She's already been had. And the precondition of these two parashiyos, of both mafata and onus, is a basula. That's explicit in the Torah.
Okay, they're assumed to be ma'ula if they are above.
Right, that's called cheskes hefker. You know, it's the chazaka is, the assumption is that a woman who's not Jewish lives a more hefker kind of life. And therefore, in the absence of any knowledge to the contrary, we assume that they have already been had, so to speak. Okay, so we had here...
So we're still talking about Nara?
Everything in our mission is talking about Nara. We're going to have Machlokas about a Katana.
Right, but here, this part. Well, a Yores?
Right, she has to be a Nara.
She has to be a Nara.
So her Geirus took place when she was 2.9. Now she's 12. She was raped by a Jewish man. And he has to pay Knas.
Okay. I got it. She converted before she was there. Okay, now I
right. Now again, according to one Tana, which we'll see in the Gemara, and that's going to be the Shittas Chachamim actually, this rape could have happened after she was 3, and he has to pay the Knas. Because when the Torah says Nara, it means even a Nara, but certainly a Katana. But again, a Katana is Ruil Abiyah, which means she's after 3. Okay. Now we get to the next group of Psulos. And these are what's called Isurei Kares. And the Mishnah wants to tell you that even if a man violated a woman, and in that act he incurred a chiyuv kares, because he raped one of his close relatives, nevertheless he pays knas. And this part of the Mishnah is probably the most important part of the Mishnah for the entire chapter. You know, some people have changed the name of this chapter. I don't mean that literally. I mean it figuratively. But instead of calling it Eilu Naris, they call it Kim Leib D'Rabamine. Because the whole perek is about Kim Leib D'Rabamine. And basically our Mishnah is going to differentiate between two types of arayos. And arayos, I don't mean lines, I mean arayos in erva relationship. One is called a chiyuv kares, and in that case there is a knas, and the other is a chiyuv misa. So for example, if a man would actually rape, I can't even say the words out of my mouth, his own daughter, then there would be no knas in that case. That's pretty paradoxical, right? A man rapes his own daughter, we alleviate him from paying the knas. And the reason for that is called kim lebe d'ramamine. But that only applies in cases where the erva is a cardinal sin, a capital sin, which means it generates a chiyuv misa. Our mission is talking about chiyuv kares. Now, chiyuv kares is a different type of onesh. Not only is it a lesser onesh than misas bezdin, but it's also a totally, qualitatively, a different category of an onesh, essentially, of an onesh. Because the onesh, the punishment of kares, is meted out bidei shamayim. And that has nothing to do with the way Bezin operates. So Bezin operates with two punishments that they have to impose. And here we apply the principle of Kim Levi the Ramamine, and they impose the higher, the more severe penalty, and they drop the lower penalty. But in a case where there's a penalty and a punishment which is imposed up in Shamayim in a different kind of Bezin, different kind of court system, that has no relevance to a Bezin Shal Oretz, Bezin on the ground. So now we're going to have a list of what's called chiyuve kares. Number one is haba al achoso. So a man has a relationship with his own sister. That's a chiyuv kares. The second case is achos aviv. This is his aunt, his father's sister. As the Brits would say, his aunt, if I can pronounce it that way, right? The alachos imo, this is also his aunt, but this is his mother's sister. The alachos ishto, this is his sister-in-law, meaning the sister of his sister, of his wife. That's an interesting case because the sister of his wife is an isa kares, which is contingent, meaning it's not, in other words, once his wife dies, he can marry her sister. And then we get to the case of Eishes Ech Achiv. Now this is also a very interesting case because Eishes Achiv, if certain conditions are met, is not only is it not an erva, but it's a mitzvah. What mitzvah am I talking about?
Yibum,
right? It's a mitzvah of Yibum. But apparently there were children from this marriage, let's say not from this marriage, because she's a Nara Psula, but the late husband of this woman had children from a previous marriage. So therefore, when he dies, she doesn't fall for Yibum, because the whole purpose of Yibum is Lahakim Shem Zara Li'achiv. But now his brother already has children in this world, so there's no mitzvah of Yibum. So his brother's wife, after his brother dies, is an erva of Eishes Achiv. Now I insist that his brother, the husband of this one, is dead, because if he's alive, then we're talking about Eishes Ish, and that would be a capital crime. We're not talking about a capital crime. So it means that he died. He died.
What if he got divorced? If he would still.
Or he divorced. Oh, correct. That's also. Right. But she's still a Naira Basula, and now there's an Iser Erev of Eishes Achiv Shalo B'makom Mitzvahs Yibum.
Right.
So right, because he has children from another man.
He'd have to be alive, but they'd have to be divorced because she couldn't have kids. Because she had kids, she would no longer...
Right, the whole issue of Yibum doesn't depend upon whether she had kids or not. It depends upon whether he had children.
Okay, so if he had children. Right. So if he had kids...
And so he had children, or like Osha says in the case of divorce. And she's never had any children. She's actually a basula, which means she never consummated her marriage. And the reason she never consummated her marriage is because there was only Erisin without Nesuin, and all this will be taken up in the Gemara. Now we have another case of an Issa Kares, and that's called Eishes Achi Aviv, his uncle's wife. So again, let's say his uncle married a woman, and it was only Erisin, they never consummated that marriage. His uncle passed on, and there was no Yibum. Then if he rapes his aunt, meaning his uncle's wife, after his uncle passed on, then he has to pay a knas, because it's only a chiyuv kares, and it's not a chiyuv misa. And the last case on this list is the al-hanida. If a man rapes a woman who's in the status of the state of nidus, which is also a violation of an isu kares. However, there's no reason to... to be mafkia, how do you say, to alleviate him from the payment of the knas, because, as we said before, there's no kimleim in the ramin, according to this Mishnah, in a case of a chiyuv karet. So she's still a nara besula. He violates the isur nida. He's chayiv karet. But nevertheless, he has to pay a knas. Yesh lehem knas, afal pi shehen bihi karet. So even though in this very act of bia, the ma'anis is chayiv kares, but nevertheless that chayiv kares is not going to ameliorate, it's not going to exempt him from the payment of tashlumin, because our Mishnah reflects the opinion that with regard to an onesh bidei shamayim, like kares, we don't apply the principle of gimlev deramimine. And that's what the Mishnah concludes here. It says, "Ein." I would add a shin over here. She'ein bohem misas bezdin. Because there's no misas bezdin, therefore the principle of kimlein rami does not apply. Hence, he has to pay the knas. So at least we can make a siyum on the Mishnah.
Can I clarify? Can I ask one thing? Alishas achiv, aviv. Rashi says that his gerushin zevinist. If he had died, he would be allowed to marry her.
I don't think so. I think that erva continues.
That remains. His
right.
Uncle,
as far as I remember, I mean, I'm not learning Yevamos now, but that's what I seem to recall. You want to check that out, Asher?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think
so let's begin the Mishnah. The Gemara says the following. Let's begin the Gemara. The Gemara says the following. The language of the Mishnah says Elu. Right. The opening line in the Mishnah is Elu. Elu usually is a word that is a miut, meaning it excludes other cases. And the Gemara asks the following. What do you mean, Elu? Are you telling me that only the women on this list, all of whom are psulos, they deserve knas? And what if she's a kshera? The word Elu seems to be out of place. Hani naros psulos islahu knas. Only, again, the word Elu means only these women who are psulos would require a knas. But if he was ma'anis ksheros, low question mark, a rhetorical question, that doesn't make any sense. In the case of ma'anis ksheros, not only does the knas apply, but even the low sealeish applies. So why would we alleviate him from the chi of knas? So the Gemara says, hachikomer. You have to understand how to read this Mishnah. Elu naros psulos sheyesh lahem knas. This is the exhaustive list of nairos psulos sheyesh lahem knas, to the exclusion of chive misas bezdin, like haba albito. She's also a psula, but nevertheless in that case there is no knas. So it's only these kind of psulos that don't get knas, because we lower it from a cardinal, a capital sin, down to a chiv kares. But obviously, in the case of a kshera, that's what we call in Yiddish upgaret. The upgaret means it goes beyond without saying that for sure he pays knas. And not only does he pay knas, but in the case of ma'anes lo siel leisha and lo yuchal shalchu kol yomav. So hachi komar elu naris psulos sheyesh lahem knas habal amamzer sal nesina akusis and so forth. What's common to all of these is that there's no chiyuv misa. Now, what's interesting here about this Gemara is that the way the Gemara is interpreting and reading the Mishnah, you have to add the word psulos, right? Elu naris psulos. And on this list, we have giores, shivcha, and shvuya. Those are not psulos. I mean, in the worst case scenario, you could say that if their geiris took place after the age of 3, they are ba'ulos. But the word psulos seems to be absolutely inapplicable, inappropriate, for those cases, those three cases that we spoke about, of Gioras, Shivcha, and Shvuya. And the Ritva is so bothered by this question that he says that we have to reinterpret the Gemara. The Gemara doesn't really mean psulos literally. Don't take the Gemara seriously. The word psulos here in this context means pugumos. Pugumos means that there's some sort of pugam, that she's not a, you know, a psula shlema b'bnos Yisrael. She's not a Beis Yankiv girl. You know, she's got some sort of psul. A pgam. It's not really a technical psul. But again, you have to be very liberal about your interpretation of the word psulos over here. Okay, now we get to the Iker Sugya. We don't have too much time. We'll just start it. We'll finish it Blineder tomorrow. And I assume that tomorrow, I don't want to count the day and call it L-A-G. Actually, it's too early. We can call Lag BaOmer. So that tomorrow's Lag BaOmer, I assume we have Shir, if anybody can't come, because that bonfire lasted through the night. Okay, I'll accept that as an excuse. We don't take attendance here. Anyway, so here's the main sugya for today, or for tomorrow, I should say. The Mishnah says Nara, Elu Naras. And once again, the word Elu seems to indicate these and only these. Nara in Ktanolo. And when the Torah says Nara, does the Torah mean only a Nara? What about a Ktana? And the Gemara says that our Mishnah actually reflects one opinion in the Tanoim. It's not the majority opinion, it's the minority opinion, that of Rabbi Meir. Man Tana, who's the author of that Mishnah? Rabbi Yehuda, Marav, Rabbi Meir. Now, just by way of introduction, and this is a really heavy sugya, Rabbi Meir compares two concepts and understands that they're mutually exclusive and they don't overlap at all. You know, you can make a chart out of this. You know, you have a concept called Mecher and you have a concept called Knas. In both cases, we're talking about the relationship between the father and his young daughter. Mecher means that the father was given by the Torah rights to sell his daughter as an Omevriya. Knas means the father was given the right to collect a penalty in the event that his daughter gets raped, called the Knas. Rabbi Meir says that those two do not overlap at all. You know, if you make different lines, you would see them as two separate things. The father is given one of two rights. Either he has the right of Mecher, or he has the right of Knas. But they're mutually exclusive. They can never coexist. Now we know for sure, says Rabbi Meir, that the father is given the rights to sell his daughter as an Amma, that's called Mecher, when she's a Ketana. Therefore, ipso facto, says Rabbi Meir, during those years, the father does not have the rights to collect the Knas. And then we're going to take the parish of Onus Mefata, and we're going to read it literally, that when the Torah says Nara, it means a Nara and only a Nara. And Rabbi Meir is based on the assumption, number one, that a man, a father, cannot sell his daughter, Mecher, as an Omevriya once she's a Nara at the age of 12. And the reason for that is because if he sold her when she was younger than 12, she goes out of the state of Omevriya. She gets free with Simonim when she has Narus. Simoni Narus means Shtei Naros. Therefore, for sure, he can't sell her when she's a Nara. But here the Torah gave him a different skus. And the Torah gave him a right to collect what? Knas. So Rabbi Meir comes up with the following principle: Kol makom sheyesh mecher ein knas. Kol makom sheyesh knas ein mecher. There's no overlap. These are two mutually exclusive concepts. Either the Torah gives the father the right to sell her as an amma, in event that he no longer has the right to sell her as an amma, then the Torah gave him a right to collect her knas. But the Torah never gave the father two different rights that will both exist simultaneously. Therefore, Rabbi Meir says that in the case of Nara in Onus Mefata, there is no, I'm sorry, starting again, that in the case of a Ketana in Onus Mefata, there is no Knas. They cannot be Knas, according to Rabbi Meir. Why? Because it's Mecher.
It's mutually exclusive.
So these are the principles. Number one, the premise is that a father can sell his daughter only when she's a Ketana, because the din is that she goes out free when she becomes a Nara with Simoni Naras. Premise number two is that if the father was granted the rights to sell his daughter as an Amma, then he was denied the rights of Knas. Premise number three is that Knas is a right of the father. And the entire parish of Nara, Besula, in Mefata and Ones of Knas is all predicated on the rights of the father. But the rights of the father for Knas can only emerge when his rights to sell her as an Amma have terminated. As long as he has rights to sell her as an Amma, that's called Mecher, which exists as long as she's a Ketana before she comes in Ara, there's no Knas. That's Rabbi Meir. The Chachom are going to disagree. The Chachom are going to say that there's an overlap. The father can have both rights simultaneously, and that's a Ketana. He can sell her as an Amma, and at the same time, he'll collect the Knas. Okay, there are both sides. So that's just an introduction to tomorrow's.